You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
Somebody's already texted in Fight Club, and Josh knew what we were going to be talking about, so he wore his Project Mayhem T-shirt. Someone else texting Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. We'll get on to why there's so few Hollywood films, let's be frank, about what it means to be a woman, maybe in this conversation, but what it means to be a man. Josh, we'll play a piece of Foxcatcher, but set this film up for people. What's going on?
So this is a film directed by Bennett Miller, and just to give a bit of context to, well, I think how the director informs our understanding of this film, he directed Capote previously and Moneyball, two films which are both very much about masculinity. So this is based on the events of wrestler Mark Schultz, who won a gold medal at the 1984 Olympics, along with his brother David Schultz, in this film played by Mark Ruffalo. And the narrative really kicks in sort of a couple of years after the Olympics. They're living it pretty tough, particularly the Channing Tatum character. And he's basically sort of sequestered by John DuPont, played by Steve Carell, this very wealthy man from a very wealthy family who wants to sponsor wrestling because it seems to tie in with his beliefs about America and where America's at in the sort of the mid-1980s, looking forward to the 1988 Olympic Games.
So we're just going to play a scene where the Channing Tatum character, the younger brother, meets Steve Carell, Steve Carell's wealthy philanthropist, in his extraordinarily exorbitant mansion for the first time. Have a listen.
Do you have any idea why I asked you to come here today?
No.
No. Well, Mark, do you have any idea who I am?
No.
I'm a wrestling coach, and I have a deep love, the sport of wrestling. And I wanted to speak with you about your future, about what you hope to achieve. What do you hope to achieve, Mark?
I want to be the best in the world. I want to go to Worlds and win gold. I want to go to the 88 Olympics in Seoul and win gold.
Good. I'm proud of you.
Now, I don't think that it's difficult to talk about this film without the look of it. And before Josh even gets into the plot, there's an amazing scene between the two brothers where they barely speak and they wrestle, and so much is said not in the script. But I don't know, Josh, what did you think of the film?
Oh, look, I think this is an extraordinary work of art. And I think one of the indictments of the Academy Awards, which we may talk about later, is the fact that this isn't even nominated for Best Film, despite the fact it's nominated for a number of other awards. Look, I think just on a surface level, and the reason why we're talking about it today is it's an examination or exploration of masculinity. But it's a beautiful... This film is a masterclass in the show-don't-tell approach of filmmaking, which is so rare nowadays. And as you mentioned, there's so much silence and sparseness in the dialogue of this film. In fact, there's no score in the first 15 minutes. It's just an extraordinary kind of tension and sparseness, particularly in that scene where the two brothers turn up to training and wrestle, and it's like a dance sequence. I mean, it is just everything about the brothers, their backstory, where they're at in their lives is expressed through this physical, these two slapping bodies and this aggression that builds and builds and sort of crescendos in this 5-minute scene where not a word is spoken. And it's remarkable, and that really sets the tone for the rest of the film. And the exploration of what is, I guess, a look at these three, well, the two brothers and the John DuPont character, and this sort of triangular conflict which crosses over not just masculinity but sexuality and very much class. And I think this film is very much about America. It's about America in the 80s, and it's about sexuality and dominance. And wrestling is a kind of a perfect analogy to explore all those sort of political ideas that Reagan talks about when he talks about the return to toughness, which he did in the 80s. And that speech we heard just there where Steve Carell talks about, "I believe in America. I want America to return to its greatness," is patent Reagan sort of talk that we saw a number of times throughout the 80s.
So I'm interested. Look, I'll get to people's calls on great films of masculinity in a moment, but is it about 80s values, or is it simply a look at men who are, I mean, they are completely lost? So Steve Carell's fabulously wealthy. Channing Tatum has no money. They've both got sort of the outward trappings of success. You know, Channing Tatum's got a gold medal, yet they are unmoored. They have no anchors. They have just zero context, or they don't have the words. They can't even put in their own minds the thoughts about what they are struggling with. They can't actually even connect with people around them emotionally. So do you think it is actually about, you know, whatever modern society can't give people, or is it simply about, it doesn't matter if you're rich and poor, you can just be completely lost in your own life?
I think it works in the context, the specific context of the 80s, and I think that's something Bennett Miller's clearly aware of, yeah, in terms of this being partly, at least based on real events that happened in that specific time. But I also think the way in which it explores the themes of class and the inability of these men to enunciate and kind of vocalize their emotions and what they're feeling is not sort of specific to the 1980s. These are themes that we've seen in films like Fight Club that have continually sort of emerged. But what I find really fascinating about Miller's specific approach to this is the way the film increasingly comes to resemble a work of almost gothic literature, because the DuPont characters is living with his aging mother, played by Vanessa Redgrave.
Fantastic cameo.
Who appears in kind of windows. You know, the whole sort of setup is this foggy moor with this mansion that sort of emerges out of the fog, and we see horses moving through the fog. And even the scene in which Channing Tatum first appears on the DuPont mansion is like a scene out of, well, it could be Wuthering Heights, it could be, you know, Oliver Twist. I mean, it's almost Dickensian as well. And there's something so fascinating about the way in which he approaches class through that sort of stylistic lens, which I loved, and it seems so suitable in terms of the way in which both DuPont and the Schultz brothers are struggling with their masculinity in different ways. But DuPont is clearly the one who has power over them because of the money, and that's what sort of he sees himself as he refers to himself, call me Golden Eagle, as rising above these other two men.
And look, I mean, clearly we both loved it. One thing I would say, if you haven't seen it, you're not sure. I mean, Josh and I are talking very much about sort of themes around emotions and that sort of thing. It is actually, though, hauntingly beautiful. I mean, it's quite extraordinary that it can make something so dark and so stark, so arresting visually. Like, it, I mean, it just works. It's beautiful filmmaking, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like visual poetry. Yeah. And I think if people are interested in this tale, just go in with an open mind in terms of the stylistic approach. Don't try and fight against it and expect everything to be explained, because it's not that type of film. It's not a film that's steeped in exposition where everything is being spelled out and explained to the audience. And I think that's what makes this a really great work of art, because so much is left unsaid and it's up to the audience to interpret, like, what's going on underneath the various surfaces that we see in this film.
I heard a great review, actually. They said that it's that watching the film is actually like wrestling yourself. Coming to grips with it and trying to get a hold on it and get a grip on it is actually really difficult, and they're trying to put you... So it's a fantastic metaphor, actually, for the way that you view the film. It is Foxcatcher. It is... Well, it's definitely still on at Palace Cinemas. I think it's on still at your average... your wider shopping centre multiplexes as well.
It's been kicked on a little bit by the award season buzz, so let's hopefully that it may pick up one or two awards and push that a little bit further.
Look, we'll get to your calls and then we'll find out what it's been nominated for, and we'll try to give you an Oscars form guide as well. Nick's call from Ascot Vale about men in film. What are your nominations, Nick?
I think Ryan Gosling usually does a really good job of showing the complexities of masculinity and being a man through many of his roles, but I think the one that personifies it best is probably Blue Valentine, where we see a really complicated character drawing out throughout the film, and the reveal of that at the end, what he's actually like, is quite powerful, I think.
Yeah, that is a fantastic film. And even not just in terms of masculinity, but in terms of the relationship between him and Michelle Williams. I think it's a really one of the most underrated films of the last probably 4 or 5 years.
Look, thanks for that one, Nick. Josh, just briefly, what is Blue Valentine about?
So Blue Valentine is about a couple played by Ryan Gosling and Michelle Williams, and it intercuts between their relationship getting together, like in the early stages, and then the relationship falling apart. So we see these constant cross-cutting between, like, the wonderful kind of triumph of this and then the buzz of the romance and the tragedy of it falling apart. And it's such an effective strategy and approach to a relationship film.
I like it. Off the back of Foxcatcher, masculinity films. And if you've got theories, by the way, on whether or not Hollywood does women as well or not, certainly aren't nearly as many stories about women. This film comprehensively fails the Bechdel test. I think there's probably only about 10 lines spoken by women. Tom has called from Carnegie, though. Hi, Tom.
G'day, Raph. G'day, Josh. First, listen, Ryan Gosling, he's a bit of a wuss, mate. If you want to see some real masculinity in film, just go to The Godfather. And the old famous line is, as they're popping each other off, it's business, not personal. And, of course, it's always personal.
Okay, I like it. It's definitely masculine. I'm not sure it's the sort of exploration. It's not advocacy explanation, but still, definitely masculine, Tom. I like it. Someone texting in to Erskineville Kings as the best Australian movie about males and masculinity. Absolutely. Hugh Jackman, Erskineville Kings? No? Yes?
Oh,
can't remember now.
Yeah, it's been a while. I was going to say Wake time. In Fright for me, for Australian masculinity.
We'll never the forget horror. Watching Wake in Fright on a hot evening once when I was a teenager. Ray's call from Altona. Ray, what's your film?
Mine's Lantana.
Why?
Look, you had three key male characters as well as the female characters, and they all had different, let's say, perceptions of what it meant to be a man. And I think Anthony LaPaglia, more than the other two, really struggled with what that was, and, you know, had the sort of alpha male persona but didn't really fit with him, basically. And, you know, the fact that it was a more emotional than physical way that they got the message across, it really worked, I thought.
Yeah, and that scene where Anthony LaPaglia falls to pieces in the car and starts thumping the steering wheel, that was actually, that stuck with me for a long time. Nice nomination, Lantana, I like it. And Stephen's called from Parkdale. Hi, Stephen.
Yeah, g'day, Raph. My couple are Mystic River and Taxi Driver.
You know, I haven't seen Taxi Driver recently, Stephen, have you?
No, but it's indelibly printed on my memory.
Yes, yeah. I've been meaning to see it again. Why Taxi Driver do you mention in the context of masculinity?
Well, it's a journey, isn't it? Mm. It's a journey into disintegration. I mean, you know, like I've heard critics say he was mad from the beginning and, you know, heroic in the end. But it's a journey through his mind.
Indeed. I like it. Look, nice nomination.
Yeah, I think Taxi Driver, and this comes back to I actually wrote a PhD on this topic, so I should be up on this. Taxi Driver comes along at a really fascinating time. If we look at why certain periods of history seem to have more of these crisis films, that the late 70s or the mid to late 70s is really fascinating in terms of Hollywood cinema, because we have this cluster of films like Apocalypse Now, like Taxi Driver, like Straw Dogs, you know, in which the male heroes of the kind of the Westerns and earlier seem to be now kind of crumbling, psychotic, sociopathic, sort of, particularly those returned sort of serviceman characters we see. And then it recurs again in the late 90s, both periods where we have democratic leaders, you know, as opposed to Republicans. And then the cycle sort of shifts back like it did for Reagan, and then from Clinton back to Bush the second. So it's
Josh
funny.
Josh's been thinking about this one.
Yeah, 6 years of, you know.
But, and one other thought, I don't know if this holds up to scrutiny or not, but Channing Tatum as the man trapped inside his own beautiful body. Two films, Magic Mike and this film. They're both about people who actually have no recourse but to use their bodies, and it completely leads them down every road that they do not want to go down, and yet they cannot get off that road.
If there are people who aren't convinced that Channing Tatum is a serious actor, they need to see this film, because his hulking body in this, and there's no really other way to describe it, is amazing. The way he physicalizes that kind of brutishness.
That wrestler's shuffle.
Yeah, is remarkable. And to be honest, so is Mark Ruffalo and Steve Carell. I thought these are three of the top performances of the last year.
Look, I'll get to more of your calls on masculinity in film, but I want to try and give you a little bit of an idea. You might not have seen, well, you might not have seen any of the Oscars films, but you might be interested to know where the little statuettes end up. Josh, take us through, I don't know, which ones do you want to start through?
Do you want to start at the top with the best picture?
Yeah, let's start with that, because Foxcatcher was not nominated
it
for that.
It was not, sadly. They're allowed to have up to 10 nominees, which is even stranger that they only picked 8 this year only. So the films up for best picture are American Sniper, Birdman, Boyhood, The Grand Budapest Hotel, The Imitation Game, Selma, The Theory of Everything, and Whiplash. And the smart money, if you're a betting person, which I'm not, I think is on Boyhood. I think Boyhood seems to be the type of film that's least likely to offend anyone, which tends to be the films that win the Academy Award for Best Picture.
Okay. Well, better than going to something like Imitation Game or Theory of Everything. I will tell you, there is a Harvard statistician who puts in all the data and weights it based on all the previous awards, like the BAFTAs, the Golden Globes, those sorts of things. He's picking Birdman for best film. So, look, who knows? Maybe Josh will be right, maybe not.
Well, my heart says Birdman, but my head says Boyhood.
Oh,
if that
okay.
makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. Tell me, so Steve Carell's nominated for best actor or best supporting actor for Foxcatcher?
Best actor.
Best
actually.
Actor. Okay.
Yeah, alongside Bradley Cooper for American Sniper, Benedict Cumberbatch, Michael Keaton, and Eddie Redmayne, who is the unbackable favourite to win for his...
I would have thought Bradley Cooper would be.
Well, you never know with the Oscars. I mean, the flag-waving sentiment may get him across the line, but Eddie Redmayne's pretty much won everything else.
Okay. And Have you seen The Theory of Everything?
No, it's one of the few that I haven't. But today I saw Jupiter Ascending, in which Eddie Redmayne plays the villain, and he's horrendous. And I almost hope that Kanye is sitting in the front row of the Academy Awards. And if Eddie Redmayne should win, then he'll leap up and give the award to Michael Keaton, who deserves it most.
Oh, well, we'll see. We'll get some more predictions in a moment. On off the back of Foxcatcher, Men in Film, Peter's call from Narre Warren. Hi, Peter.
Yeah, g'day, Rafa. A film I really loved was Jack Thompson a long time ago. It was called, I think, Sunday Far Away or Sunday Too Far Away.
Sunday Too Far Away, I think.
Yeah, he was a shearer in the outback and, you know, pretty tough hombre. Starts off with him rolling a beautiful old FJ Holden, and he sort of gets himself off, gets himself out of the car and dusts himself off and sort of walks off to work. It's a really good movie, really good depiction of Australia in the outback, I think.
Nice one, Peter. So, quite a few of you also nominating The Sum of Us, which from memory is Russell Crowe and Jack Thompson, isn't it?
It is indeed.
Yeah, quite a few of you loving that. And nominating this one, The Rage in Placid Lake with Ben Lee and Rose Byrne, which I didn't see. Do you remember that?
Very limited release in the late 90s, I think. Yeah.
Old film. Okay, so we've done Best Actor, Best Actress.
Okay, so the actors up for Best Actress are Marion Cotillard for 2 Days, One Night. And I think, did we both see that or was it just me with the gush fest?
Yeah.
I thought she was extraordinary in that. Felicity Jones for The Theory of Everything. Julianne Moore, Still Alice. Rosamund Pike for Gone Girl. And Reese Witherspoon for Wild.
Rosamund Pike is nominated for Gone Girl. You're kidding.
No, it's there in black and white print in front of me.
I am outraged.
And again, a bit like Eddie Redmayne, all the smart money is on Julianne Moore winning for Still Alice. And
yeah,
apparently her performance, and again, it's one I haven't seen, but is extraordinary in a film that is so-so.
Okay. Selma's also not nominated for Best Film, I think.
It didn't get Best Director, but it got Best Picture nomination.
Oh, sorry. Oh, Best Picture, but not Best Director. So who are the director nominees?
Richard Linklater for Boyhood, Alejandro Iñárritu for Birdman, Bennett Miller got a nom for Foxcatcher, and also Wes Anderson for Grand Budapest, and Morten Tildum for The Imitation Game.
Okay, where's it going to go?
Oh, look, it'll depend on whether Boyhood starts cleaning up. Linklater could win. My heart says Iñárritu's in with a chance there. I don't think Bennett Miller will win, although you know, I'd love it if he did.
What's going on with the Grand Budapest Hotel? Because I haven't seen it, but people rave about it, and it seems to have this extraordinary response, and it appears to be quite unique and original, yet doesn't get mentioned. Sorry, that sort of is attractive to people who vote for Oscars, isn't it?
Look, I think it will get recognised somewhere, either in script or I'm sure visual design. I'm sure it's up for a couple of those kind of more artistic production design awards. And Wes Anderson's been nominated a few times, so that always helps if you haven't had the kind of the wins on the board before.
Yeah, of course.
Then they like to go, look, this person deserves their recognition, which is what is driving the campaign, if you want to call it that, behind Julianne Moore winning, because she's been a quote-unquote bridesmaid for four times before.
Has she never won?
No.
Oh, I didn't realize. She's
not for best. Not for best actress. She's definitely been nominated a few times, though.
And Ray and Altona nominating Once Were Warriors.
Oh, that's a film that stays with you.
Devastating. Absolutely devastating. Except he never really did another good film, did he? What was his name?
Lee Tamahori?
Yeah. Did he do another great film? I can't think of one. And Shiraj is called from Knoxfield. Why? Because he calls every film segment. We love the loyalty. Shiraj, welcome. What's your masculinity film?
It's Taps or The Outsiders.
The Outsiders. Now, The Outsiders actually, I think the Kino is showing a series of classics, and The Outsiders is one of them. Why Outsiders, Shiraj?
Because it's about these guys who have different views on manhood. I mean, they're all growing up. It's a coming of age story, but
yes,
you have these different viewpoints as to what a man should be, and they contradict each other, and it somehow gels together, but it's also very contradictory with each other. So it's quite a good.
I mean, the
viewpoints on both sides. I guess.
Yeah, no, you're right, Shiraj. It's a great nomination, actually, because not only do you have C. Thomas Howell, Tom Cruise,
Patrick Swayze, Ralph Macchio,
a few others.
Matt Dillon, is he in there as well?
I think Matt Dillon might be. And it's Coppola, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
That's a film and a half.
Just very quickly, because I saw it again this week, speaking of that era, Stand By Me, in terms of coming
still
of age. Oh, geez, it holds up so well.
Okay. I thought about hiring streaming Outsiders, actually. I was like, I wonder if that is, because that rocked my socks off.
Yep, show it to your kids.
Yeah, maybe. And Alana's call from Mount Eliza. Hi, Alana.
Hi, how are you?
What's yours?
Mine's Out of the Furnace, Christian Bale.
Oh, what? I haven't seen that. What's it about?
Oh, it's fantastic. It's a brother film. They both work in, one of them works in steel mills. And it's very grotty, and it's a very down sort of little town that they live in. And the little brother decides to do fighting in order to make money.
Okay, and why do you like it?
I think it explored the maleness. very much, and especially in relation to class, they're all extremely poverty-stricken and they're all just working for the man. Yeah. It was a beautiful exploration of men, I thought.
Almost seems inextricably linked, class and masculinity in most films. And just because she's gone to so much effort from Jenny and Fitzroy, I need to read this text out. Now I just need to see Selma on Sunday, and I'm ready to have opinions about the winners and losers on Monday. So far, I think the winners will be Eddie Redmayne, Julianne Moore, J.K. Simmons, that's Whiplash, Patricia Arquette, Boyhood, that'd be supporting actress, best film, Birdman, best director, Richard Linklater. Jenny likes to get all the films into her before the Oscars come around, so we'll see if she and Josh are right. Josh, thanks for coming in.
Pleasure.
Josh Nelson's work you can see at filmology.com. We were speaking about Foxcatcher. The Oscars kick off around midday on Monday.